Whole Hog Sports presents the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, the premier Arkansas hoops podcast, brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. With Whole Hog Sports basketball analyst Scotty Bordelon, here's your host, Matt Jones.
It's SEC Tournament Week. The Razorbacks will play their first game Friday in Tampa against either LSU or Missouri. Missouri beat Ole Miss on Wednesday night in the first round of the SEC Tournament. The Razorbacks play Missouri. It'll be a chance to sweep the Tigers in three games this season. Same thing with LSU. Arkansas beat LSU in Baton Rouge in January, beat them in Fayetteville in March. Those games much, much closer than the Razorbacks games against Missouri this year. Matt Jones with Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph of WholeHogSports.com. And Scotty, I think whenever Arkansas lost the game to Tennessee last weekend, there were a lot of people who kind of believed that it would be Arkansas-LSU on Friday in the SEC tournament. We'll see if Missouri can put a wrench in that. But when you look at the two games these two teams have played this season, if it is Arkansas-LSU, it seems to me that's a really, really tough draw for the Razorbacks in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, LSU is not exactly the team that you want to see on a neutral floor. I mean, they've kind of just got everything good team needs, and it's, you know, it's always kind of curious that LSU, I don't know, I'm not surprised that they finished fifth in the league, but I thought that, you know, given the talent that they did have, they could have finished higher. But I will say that the injury to Xavier Pinson, you know, threw a big wrench into what LSU was doing this season. And, you know, they've got loads of talent. Like Efton Reed is really, really good. Tari Eason, the SEC Sixth Man of the Year, like Arkansas saw firsthand. You know, he's a real problem. I think he scored 23 or 24 points on Arkansas and Bud Walton. That game, you wish that Audis Toney was healthy because you need his offensive rebounding. You need his, you know, his basket cutting. And just the way that he reads defenses is pretty special. And, you know, Arkansas is going into that game not knowing if they're going to have him. I think it's probably unlikely that he plays in Tampa because that's not your whole season. That's just a pretty tough draw for Arkansas in their first game if, you know, as long as Bob's Missouri Tigers don't get in the way.
Yeah, Missouri beat Ole Miss 72-60 on Wednesday night. Andrew, we haven't had a chance to talk about the LSU game last week whenever the Razorbacks beat the Tigers 77-76 at Bud Walton Arena. For some reason, it seems like it's been a lot longer than just a week since those two teams played. A lot has transpired since then, but that felt like a game that Arkansas was kind of lucky to get out of there with a win because LSU, it felt like outplayed Arkansas for a good bit of that game. And I don't know, with about a minute and a half left when Jalen Williams had fouled out and LSU had a 4-point lead, it didn't feel like Arkansas had a very good chance. Just kind of the thing we've seen with this team all year, even in the Tennessee game, the game after. They can really score a flurry of points in a hurry, and they've been a really good team in the final couple of minutes this year, and that was the case last Wednesday.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, and I think these last couple games that they've had in the past week, LSU and Tennessee, kind of showed their true grit and toughness that they have as a team. When LSU came to Fayetteville, yeah, I think you're exactly right when you said it didn't look like a game that they were bound to win or going to win, especially when Jalen Williams fouled out. But you had guys step up off the bench. Kamandi Johnson came in and gave you good minutes. And Stanley Amude stepped up the scoring for JD Notae on an off night and had over 20 points. So I think for them to have a successful run in the SEC tournament as well as the NCAA tournament, they're going to have guys outside of JD Notae and Jalen Williams step up because those are going to be the focuses of the opposing scouting reports. And I think they've shown throughout this course of the season that they have those guys that can fill those roles.
I'm still not exactly sure how Arkansas beat LSU. I mean, it seemed like every time Arkansas was, you know, started chipping away, like Stanley Amude hit two really big threes in the second half to cut, I think, Arkansas's deficits to like 1 and 2 points. But LSU answered, I feel like, both of those shots. And it was either Xavier Pinson scoring, driving the ball, which he had a really bad night scoring the ball, but I feel like late, you know, he had a big bucket on a drive. Eric Gaines had one too. Tari Eason was, you know, he was a, like I said earlier, is a real problem. But Arkansas just finds ways to win, and I don't always understand it. and maybe it's maybe I'm making it more than it should be, but like even the Tennessee game, you get down 24 points, and I mean that was Arkansas's largest deficit since they lost to Oklahoma and Tulsa when I think they got down 26, and they chip away. Like, it's all obviously very nice to have JD Notte, who can, you know, he can score 8 to 10 points in about 2.5 to 3 minutes and feels like you're right back in a ball game. Stanley played good. And obviously, you know, in the second half when Arkansas was figuring some things out, Jalen Williams was back to his normal self. I can't remember the last time he didn't score in a half and only took one shot, had like maybe just a couple of rebounds. But that was, I feel like that was the most predictable game for Jalen to kind of struggle in early because of the way that he successfully drew charges the first time around against Tennessee. The way that Rick Barnes complained about it, like a teenager after the loss at Arkansas, he figured that he was going to, that Tennessee was going to probably get some home whistles in that game. But they find ways to if not win, really, really compete. Like, you forget, like, the last two games that they've lost, they got down 13 to Alabama, and they took the lead late in the second half and, you know, maybe should have won that game. It took Alabama scoring on Jalen Williams in the restricted area twice to win that game. And not many teams have had success doing that. So just all around really, really tough group. And I mean, I think that's what you want going into March. Like, you need a, not only a physically tough team that, you know, like Arkansas has got, but they're mentally tough too. And they've overcome a lot. And I think their togetherness also kind of lends to that toughness too, because they stick together when things get pretty, pretty challenging.
One of the big turning points in that LSU game at Bud Walton was when Tari Eason fouled out with about 1.5 minutes left in that game. He was almost unstoppable, I thought, up until that point. You know, with LSU, Scotty, it almost feels like there is a lack of discipline with that team, which might go to speak to what you were talking about. You know, how does a team so talented finish fifth in the SEC? And it's not just that they finished fifth, because to finish fifth, they had to go 9-9 in conference play. It felt like there was a lot more talent on that team than to be a 9-9 team. Now, you mentioned that Pinson was out for a good part of the season. I think that probably affected them in some games, maybe even the Arkansas game that the Razorbacks won in Baton Rouge back in January. But, you know, there's a documentary out about the Lakers right now, Winning Time. You know, how do you play in Winning Time? And, you know, I think Arkansas plays really well in Winning Time. I'm not so sure that LSU does. And there might be a little bit of lack of discipline that could explain the end of that game.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, like the old saying is, like, lots of teams are a reflection of their head coach. And lots of people don't like LSU's head coach. And there's good reason for that. And I think, like, you're right. Like, they're very undisciplined at times. Like, there was, I think, in the last minute, maybe even last 30 seconds of Arkansas's win over LSU in Fayetteville, it was, I think, Xavier Pinson took a three late in the shot clock, missed it, and LSU's up one. Remember that. And so Eric Gaines grabs an offensive rebound with like 15 or 16 seconds left, and he goes back up with a shot. Why would you do that? Why would you not grab the ball and try to pull it out and force Arkansas to foul you? And then it's a free throw game, and, you know, things are kind of tipping in your direction. But he goes up for a layup and misses it. And, you know, Monty Wilkinson down on the other end of the floor just, for whatever reason, just decided to club JD Notte. Like, it didn't make any sense whatsoever. There's already two, he already had two teammates surrounding JD, but he also wanted to get in the middle of it and try to hack at the ball, and it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But, you know, like, I feel like I was talking to Bob, I think, after that game, and we were just talking about, you know, what we think Eric could do with that roster, even if Eric didn't have Xavier Pinson like Will Wade didn't. And I think that was, that's kind of a sign that, you know, I think Eric would have made Tari Eason, you know, more of a focal point of his offense, you know, with Xavier Pinson out. And I think he also would have figured out a way to make Eric Gaines as effective as possible, and, you know, some of those other kind of complementary pieces. But I'm kind of surprised with all the talent that LSU's got that they lost 9 games in the league. I think they, you know, they probably should have won They probably should have won the game against Arkansas and Baton Rouge, so that could have put them at 10, and I'm sure there's another couple games that they let slip away. But that's a team that's too tough and too talented to be kind of like very middle-ish of the pack in the SEC, even with injuries. Like, you got the SEC sixth man of the year, who's, you know, I think he's first-team all-SEC guy, in my opinion. It's strange to see them fifth in the league, even with an injury.
It almost feels like if Arkansas plays LSU, and we're putting a lot of eggs in this LSU basket, sorry if Missouri wins, and we haven't previewed that game real adequately. Arkansas beat Missouri by a combined 63 points in their two games during the regular season. But if Arkansas plays LSU, doesn't it feel like Arkansas might be, if not an underdog, feels like it would be really hard for them to win this game? I mean, you just kind of go through some of the things here. Adis Toney, probably not going to play. He had 18 points and was a huge factor in that game against the Tigers, at Bud Walton especially. And then you just got the fact that it is really hard to beat a team three times in the season. Doesn't matter what team it is, let alone a good one, a talented one like LSU. And I just think that LSU's got the revenge factor in this one that might make it pretty tough for the Razorbacks if that is the draw Friday afternoon.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know how KenPom works, but I like to look at the stats and compare for comparison's sake. And LSU is still sitting at 17, where Arkansas is two spots down at 19. And so Arkansas is lower than a team they've beat twice this season and finish higher in the conference. And I mean, I don't know how that works, but clearly there is some kind of formula that thinks LSU is a winning team and even better than Arkansas, apparently.
Yeah, those KenPom numbers, the rankings are based on like your efficiency margin. So you take your offensive efficiency rating for the season and your defensive efficiency rating for the season, you subtract one from the other, and that efficiency margin kind of that goes to that's how the teams are ranked on KenPom. So it kind of makes sense because LSU is so good defensively, like throughout the season. I think they're top 10 defensively. In efficiency, and their offense has been kind of so-so, which is weird, kind of for an LSU team that you've, like in years past, they've been like one of the more impressive offensive teams in the country, but they couldn't defend me. But this year they're kind of complete opposite. Like they kind of struggle to score, and part of that's because they had Pinson out for a stretch, but they really, really defend. And when they do have Pinson, he makes a difference because he's pretty savvy and pretty good on the defensive end. But on the other hand, Arkansas, I get why they're kind of at 19, and they haven't really moved from that spot or from that area very much, because they're, like Eric will say, like they're not the most aesthetically pleasing offensive team, but they will defend their tails off. Like I think they're in that top 15 range for the second year in a row, which is, I don't think we would have ever guessed that after Arkansas gave up 89 to Hofstra and gave up a double-double to Bebe, right? But I think a lot of times people might have a tendency of looking at maybe who is an overall tougher team or which team has guys that can give energy in a building that maybe doesn't, where the people in the building largely maybe don't have a rooting interest and they're just kind of there cheering for both teams to have fun. Like, I think LSU's got some guys that, like Tari Eason, he can bring energy. Xavier Pinson the same way. Whereas I think Arkansas, they've obviously got guys like that, but I feel like they're more just, we're going to try to take care of business and move on to the next game. Whereas LSU might, you know, they might go on a 10-0 run and they might really, really let you know about it. I think those are the kinds of things that people look at when you kind of got two fairly even teams on a neutral floor. I may be looking too much into that, but that's just kind of my thoughts on it.
It is just a confusing layout on this website. Maybe I'm just not a numbers guy, but I'm just going through and I'm seeing the offensive efficiency number for Arkansas is at 111. LSU's at 108. So you've got a higher offensive efficiency for Arkansas. And then the defensive efficiency is going to be at 91 for Arkansas and 88 for LSU, which, I mean, doesn't seem like a huge difference, but in the little subscript, LSU's is fifth in the nation and Arkansas is 16, if I'm reading that correctly. So it doesn't seem like a huge difference, which I guess would make sense that they're only two spots away from each other.
think that could be one of those deals too, where Arkansas is still being held responsible for its entire body of work. And, you know, the loss to Oklahoma's not terrible, but that's not a good loss that they had early in the season. Obviously, the loss to Hofstra is hurting them. And that kind of is a good segue into talking about NCAA tournament seeding. On Sunday, the NCAA tournament selection show will air at 5 o'clock. We'll find out where the Razorbacks are going to play their first round tournament game. It seems like there's a lot of thought right now, as you read the bracket experts heading into this, that if Arkansas wins, they'll stay on the four line. If they lose, they'll probably fall off of the four line. Maybe they fall to five. Do you think it really matters if they're a four or a five? I mean, I know the 5-12 game is always the one that a lot of people hone in on and believe there are a lot of upsets in the NCAA tournament in the first round, but it seems to me like there's really not a whole lot of difference between the four and the five seed.
No, I would kind of agree with that. And I think if we're looking at what the ceiling, you know, for Arkansas's NCAA tournament seeding is, I think it's probably a three. And I think that would probably take Arkansas getting to the SEC championship game on Sunday, which would mean that Arkansas would have beaten likely LSU for a third time, Auburn for a second time, and whatever happens on Sunday kind of happens. I think once the selection committee kind of starts seeing teams that are in the championship games of their conference tournament, they just, unless one of the teams just gets absolutely blown out, I think the committee's just, they're kind of looking to see just who's there and if they're competing or not. I think if Arkansas, you know, maybe goes 1-1, I think they probably stay put. Like, I don't understand why they would maybe fall off that four line, unless, you know, some of those teams that are also in contention for a four, you know, maybe they make a run to the title game in their conference tournament. I know as Arkansas was the beneficiary, even after a loss at Tennessee, as far as moving up to a four line, because Memphis or Houston lost to Memphis pretty embarrassingly, and Michigan beat Ohio State, I think, on the same weekend. So you can be a beneficiary, you know, as far as your seeding is concerned, even if you lose based on, you know, the results of some other games. I think the floor for Arkansas is a five, and I think Arkansas would be a pretty dangerous five in its region.
Yeah, to me, I think from an Arkansas standpoint, they have way more to lose in this SEC tournament than they do by winning. I mean, I think they have more to lose through player injuries and fatigue than they do by winning the tournament outright. I think winning the tournament outright is the only way, like Scotty said, that they advance off that three up to a three seed line. And there's no shame in already having that double bye. There's no shame in losing to a team like LSU in the quarterfinal. I don't think that drops you much, if at all. But to me, I think the bigger question is whether or not that they've peaked, because, you know, so much of the tournament is riding a hot hand and getting hot at the right time. And you had that stretch in from, I think it was almost like a 2-month long stretch where they won 14 out of 15. I'm wondering maybe if they peaked too early.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if Arkansas is a little bit fatigued after just the finish that they had to their regular season schedule. Like, four of their last five games, I think, were against teams that finished in the top five of the league. And the other one was Florida, who's, you know, I was just watching SEC Now a few minutes before we started recording this, and a couple of the analysts were saying that they think Florida's like maybe a dark horse to get to the weekend. Like, that's a pretty tough stretch. Arkansas handled it really well because they got their stuff together after that 1-5 stretch, you know, about the middle of the year. I wouldn't say I'm concerned, but that's kind of at the forefront of my mind a little bit, that the team might be a little bit fatigued just based on how their schedule landed at the end of the regular season. Like Eric said, that, you know, he hasn't been in college that long, but, you know, looking at some of the other schedules that he's had, I mean, that was the toughest closing schedule that he's had in his time as a college coach. But I mean, I think going back to what I said earlier, I don't think there should be too much emphasis placed on the SEC tournament. Like, to me, the real winner of the SEC is determined during the regular season when it's actually a real grind. Like, You're playing two games a week, and you're not playing back, potentially back-to-back-to-back days. Like, that's – at no other point in the season are you going to do that. And so why would you put more emphasis on trying to win, like, maybe three games in 3 days as opposed to, you know, kind of putting all of your eggs into your basket in the NCAA tournament? Arkansas is going to go to Tampa, and they're going to fight. Like, that's just – Eric's teams are going to do that, and they may – they're probably, I would say, going to do it without Audis, because your season is not defined by what you do in the SEC tournament. I would say it's more based on how you fared in the regular season when, you know, you're playing the same schedule essentially that, you know, every other team is. And then everybody's going to remember what you did in March and how you finished there and how you played on a national stage. And In my opinion, I think Arkansas is going to do well in the NCAA tournament, because you look at, you know, the majority of the national stages that they played on in the regular season, they were more than ready and they delivered.
We use this analogy all the time in our baseball podcast. It's not about Hoover, even though there's a lot of emphasis, I feel like, from the fan base that's put on Hoover. It's about Omaha. You know, people don't remember how you finished in Hoover. They remember whether or not you got to Omaha in baseball. Same thing goes for basketball. You know, people don't really remember if you won an SEC tournament title, unless maybe that was the defining point of your season. Say, like, when Arkansas won the tournament in 2000, they wouldn't have gone to the NCAA tournament that year. They were 15-14 going into Atlanta. That was a big landmark event for that season. For a team like this, you're going to remember whether or not they made the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, you know, the Final Four. Those are the things that are going to define this season, whether, you know, over the conference tournament. And I think there's a really good debate to be had here, and the older I get, the more I feel this way, is that the automatic qualifier should not come from the conference tournaments. It's just it's a poor reflection, I think, of who the best teams are. And what you end up getting in the March Madness is you get a lot of really crappy, quite frankly, you know, 14-3, 15-2 type matchups, when you've got a team that just got hot. Maybe they were 14-18 going into the conference tournament. They got hot, and they get their conference's automatic qualifier, and you might have a team that's 27-2 heading to the NIT. It just would make a lot better NCAA tournament, I feel, if we would reward the teams who have had a great regular season versus the teams who've had a great weekend.
No, I'm 100% with you on that. That's what I basically said just a minute ago. Like, the regular season's a better indicator of who the best teams in your league are. Vanderbilt might get hot in Tampa. Like, Scottie Pippen Jr. is a really good player. He could carry a team for, you know, a couple days if, you know, the teams that they're playing, you know, kind of really stink it up. I mean, I feel like that's what would really have to happen. But, like, going back to, like, yesterday in the ACC tournament, Florida State lost by 30-plus points to Syracuse, and that Florida State team beat Duke. You look at, I think, the last ACC tournament, maybe last year or the year before, Georgia Tech won it. And Georgia Tech wasn't going to make the NCAA tournament without winning that. And I'm not really sure. Like, it's great that they won their tournament, and that was the only way they were going to get in it. But there's no way that Georgia Tech realistically should have been an NCAA tournament team. I mean, they just got hot for a few days, rode a hot hand. Like Andrew said, that's what a lot about these games this time of the year are riding a hot hand. But yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think the regular season champion probably should be rewarded. But on the other hand, I was watching a game the other night. I think it was Furman and Chattanooga. And, you know, that's the 1-2 in the conference. So you real deal got the two best teams in your conference from the regular season. And I think both of those teams, like, neither one of those teams deserved to lose. The thing is, like, if we're just rewarding the regular season champion, then, you know, it kind of takes away from the fun of kind of those smaller conference tournament games that are more than anything. I mean, they're more likely. A lot of those small conference tournaments are more fun than the you know, the Power Five leagues, just because there's so much to fight for in those conference tournaments.
Funny you guys bring up the conference champion debate versus the tournament champion debate, because of the Bellarmine Jacksonville State situation, where Bellarmine won their conference, but they're still not getting that automatic bid because they haven't completed their transition from a Division II to a Division I school. And so the Jacksonville State, who won the regular season championship, is going to go to the tournament instead of Bellarmine.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues that I have with that too, but we can save that for another podcast. Craziest SEC tournament I've ever been to, 2008, Georgia comes into it with a losing record, and we're dodging tornadoes for three straight days in downtown Atlanta, and Georgia gets hot. They win two games in one day, and then they beat Arkansas on Championship Sunday, and that probably saved Dennis Felton's job. The Basketball Podcast of Mid-America is brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. Visit their showroom at 411 South Metro Parkway in Rogers or online at LandersToyotaNWA.com.
For all your automotive needs, shop Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers, where we guarantee you the best buying experience and best service after the sale in Arkansas. Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
All SEC teams came out this week, and for Arkansas, they've got two first-teamers on the coaches' team for the first time since 1995. Jalen Williams and JD Notte were both first-team picks for the Razorbacks on the coaches' team. On the AP team, which is formatted differently from the coaches, JD Notte was a first-teamer, and Jalen Williams was a second-teamer. The coaches also put out an all-defensive team, and Jalen Williams, to no one's surprise, was on the SEC all-defensive team, but it's the fourth time that an Arkansas set of teammates have been first-team all-SEC picks on the coaches' teams. And the only other times that it happened was 1994 and 1995. Scotty Thurman and Corliss Williamson were both first-teamers. And then in 1992, Arkansas's first year in the league, Lee Mayberry and Todd Day were both first-teamers. Scotty, that is Arkansas royalty that we're talking about basketball-wise, that now you're going to put J.D. Notte and Jalen Williams into that category. I think it really goes to speak to just how rare this type of season has been, you know, to have two players who are playing at such an elite high level.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about it is I don't think either of those guys really understand the magnitude of what they've done. And that's kind of cool, like the kind of the naivete of it. Like JD just wants to hoop, man. And he wants to win, and Jalen is the same way. Like, I'm about 0 for 20 this year asking Jalen Williams to, or like trying to get Jalen Williams to talk about himself, because all he wants to do is talk about how all he wants to do is help the team win. And that's what both of those guys did. And I remember after, I think, January, I kind of wrote an analysis of Arkansas's play throughout that month. And I really thought that Jalen and JD really grabbed a firm hold of the team that month, and then it just carried out. It carried on throughout the rest of the year, and you look at those guys' net ratings, and they're outrageous. Like JD, I think Arkansas is about 28 points per 100 possessions better when JD's out there, which not really a surprise, but it's still a pretty crazy number. That's almost 30 points per 100 possessions. It's insane, and Jalen is around I think he's around 21 or 22 points per 100 possessions. Arkansas is better when he's out there. And so that right there just kind of speaks to the value of both guys. And you saw at the end of the LSU game when Jalen fouled out, I feel like a lot of people, like, they were pinching holes in their seats because they're like, how in the world is Arkansas going to finish this game without the guy who kind of holds everything together? Like, I've long said that JD makes Arkansas go, but Jalen holds everything together. And without him and without both of those guys, I mean, Arkansas would be lost. And if not for, you know, the way that Jalen progressed on the offensive end, and, you know, just the, he was so good at so many things early in the year, but he started rebounding better and then he got more aggressive on the offensive end. And it just took Arkansas to a completely different level, you know, to the point where, you know, he was able to help Arkansas pull itself out of like the low of the lows, like Eric Musselman said after that loss against Hofstra. And Arkansas straight up needed JD and Jalen to play like that to pull themselves out of where they were from if they wanted to get back on a national stage, and they did it. It's just, it's pretty remarkable given that JD was sixth man off the bench last year. Sometimes he didn't play in half of the team's minutes. And then Jalen was about, you know, 4 points, five rebounds somewhere in there last year. It's just, it's crazy to watch and to have watched the, like the growth and the development of both of those guys this year is really fascinating.
Yeah, I think coming into the season that we knew JD Notte was kind of capable of the big nights because he had them in the past as a sixth man. And then coming into the starting lineup, I think we kind of expected this to be his team. And he has taken over the team as well. But Jalen Williams, I think, was more of a surprise in the fact that he was still a good player, played a lot in the latter half of his freshman season. But I think once conference play started this season, the light just turned on for him, and he just became a different player than he was previously. And I think those two are probably the guys that are going to carry this team come March. And I think that just watching Jalen Williams transition into a real leader and a focal point on this team has been something special to watch because it happened just in the blink of an eye.
Really, I think the most impressive thing to me just about JD is the fact that he's asked to do so much, like on both ends of the floor. Like offensively, he's asked to play create and play make for literally everyone, like including himself. And then Eric is also like really on his tail about being a pesky perimeter defender. And I just think back to games like Auburn where he was having to check, you know, Katie Johnson, Wendell Green, and some of those guys. And then in the Kentucky game, Ty Washington, Sevier Wheeler for stretches. Like, and I think he gave up 8 buckets on 29 shots in those games. So like JD, I think he even had a case for the all SEC defensive team too. He was awesome defensively, you know, outside of just a couple games and maybe some momentary lapses where he lost his guy off the ball. But JD was asked to do so much, and the way that he held up, I mean, you never saw JD get calf cramps. Like, I just can't remember that ever happening. And we saw several guys do it. And I think it just goes to show, like, the work that he did in the off season where he was working out, you know, 3 or 4 times on his own after, you know, kind of the team's organized workouts and that kind of thing. That stuff really pays off. And it was interesting to hear JD the other day say that, you know, he's still lifting weights and still grinding and working out almost as hard as he did in the summer because, you know, it makes him feel good. It's like if you work out all the time and then you stop, your body probably doesn't feel as good as it would if you keep doing it. So JD's going to keep doing it. He's still going to keep giving teams buckets too.
I really thought the most impressive thing about Notte was this year was how he kind of transitioned his game somewhere around the start of SEC play. Remember early in the year, we were talking about he was taking too many shots. He was taking a lot of ill-advised shots. His shot selection became a lot better as the season went along. And Scotty, I thought he became a lot better passer.
Yeah, I think that's really a misconception about JD is that he doesn't pass the ball. Eric wouldn't have him running point like if he couldn't create for others. I mean, JD's obviously he's a scorer first. He was a born scorer. I mean, you see that in high school. You look at some of his numbers. He was averaging like 20 points and like, you know, maybe like 3 or 4 assists a game. That's the biggest misconception about JD. He will set guys up absolutely. Like his potential assists this year were pretty impressive. It's just sometimes teammates don't knock down shots when he sets them up, so he doesn't get credit for the assist, which I think that's kind of crappy because it doesn't really give you a real indication of how well he's setting others up and looking for others. But he's very dynamic in that middle third of the floor, especially off the dribble. You know, he could knock down a three from there. He's really, really good in pick and roll, finding Jalen Williams and guys in the corners or on the wings too. Once he collapses a defense, he was his playmaking ability, I thought, really, really took a leap. And he was a guy that you felt ultra comfortable with the ball in his hand. Like if the ball was in anybody else's hands other than maybe Jalen, you know, maybe you're a little bit nervous, but with JD, you felt pretty comfortable and confident.
Had it not been for Oscar Tshiebwe this year, a good case could have been made for JD Notae to be SEC Player of the Year. I think a good case could have been made for Eric Musselman to be SEC Coach of the Year based on the way the Razorbacks really just changed the look of their team midway through the season. Bruce Pearl ended up winning that one, which I guess was kind of predictable given the fact that Auburn won the regular season title. But I know someone who voted for Eric Musselman for SEC Coach of the Year, and they made a pretty compelling argument to me for that. Arkansas will play either LSU or Missouri on Friday afternoon. It'll be a tip-off of around 1 o'clock. The game before it begins at 11. The Arkansas game will start 30 minutes after the conclusion of that one. The game will be televised by ESPN. If they win, they play Saturday. You know how the tournament schedule goes. And then the NCAA tournament selection show is Sunday afternoon. We'll be back the first part of next week to talk about Arkansas's NCAA draw, whenever the field and the brackets are announced. Go to wholehogsports.com until then for coverage before, during, and after the games. Also check out the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. Bubba Carpenter and I take a look back at the Southeastern Louisiana series and ahead to this week's series against the University of Illinois Chicago at Baum Walker Stadium. You can find all of our podcasts by searching Whole Hog Radio. That's three words, WHOLEHOGRADIO on Apple, Spotify, or in most other podcast stores. For Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you again next week on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.